copyright forum of Christian leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
All right, so I moved from witchcraft to neo-paganism. So we looked at a more specific group, witchcraft, and now we're moving to neo-paganism. And I just want to note before I begin that I have my contact information on the board here. If any of you need to email me, it's kevin.lewis@biola.edu. It's my Biola email address. I have two websites, my Biola faculty website, theolaw.org. But I also have an organization I found, a nonprofit called the Institute for Theology and Law. I'm in the midst right now of populating the website. It'll have all sorts of resources on all these kinds of topics I talk about. So keep an eye on that as well. There's another way for you to contact me on this. Because ultimately what you need, these 20-minute talks are going to wet your whistle on the topics. But you need, if you really want to go further, you've got to get more resources and how to study, reading lists. And so I've got bibliographies available, you know, if you want to read more on these subjects. So it'll be helpful. So to move to the next phase is to move to now neo-paganism. Now, why is it called neo-paganism? Well, first, remember, the pagan religions ultimately were those religions of the pre-Christian era that generally were polytheistic. And as I explained in a previous lecture, The idea of the pagan, pagan in Latin means rural, R-U-R-A-L, the rural people. Why? Because when Constantine, Christianized, in quotes, the Roman Empire and said Christianity is the official religion, well, you weren't supposed to be able to practice the old religions anymore. So they had to move to the outskirts of the empire and civilization. Hence, these were the old Druids, the Egyptian religions that were polytheistic, in other words, which basically were many gods and a magical worldview. Okay? That's what paganism is. And again, we distinguished earlier as well the difference between polytheism, which ultimately pagan mostly means polytheism, in the old paganism. Neo-paganism, it's almost anything goes except biblical Christianity as a worldview. And I'll talk about that as some of the factors. And remember, some of the things I'm going to talk about in neo-paganism generally, this will actually fill in some of the gaps on the witchcraft outline as well, because witchcraft is, remember, just one form of neo-paganism. Just has some specific ideas there. So that's the old paganism. What's neo-paganism? Well, it's the new paganism, right? See, we'd have to ask, why is the occult making a comeback? It's very simple. In Christian culture, when Christianity is strong, based on we understand the connection between the occult and the demonic and that it's harmful, what do? We do everything to forbid these practices. So what happens is these religions have to go underground. When the church gets weak and we don't believe Jesus is the only way to salvation, we don't really believe the Bible that these things are harmful, now pluralism makes a comeback. Well, what happens now? Now these old religions that were practicing in secret now become public, and they can publish and recruit, and so now there's a growing movement of these groups. So, for example, again, there's a number of witchcraft groups and associations out there. In fact, in America, there's a Witches Anti-Defamation League out there, and I've heard from them a couple of times. I do a lot of media interviews, and all of a sudden, I said something they didn't like, so I hear from the Witches Anti-Defamation League or something, and then. There's a whole, I kid you not, the North American Association of Neo-Druids out there. So, the old Druidism is back, and again, it's coming back in full force. So, the neo-paganism are really just the old religions that have come back. I mean, they're the Druids, they're the Wiccans, they're the goddess worshippers. They are Asatru, if any of you have heard of Asatru. What's that? That was the religion of the Norse people, Thor, Odin, and so forth. Well, that's made a comeback. The Egyptian gods have made a comeback. So again, most of these are tribal or regional deities as far as multiple gods and systems. So that's why people sort of pick and choose which one they want to follow. A lot of what we hear in the West is based on the Northwestern European fairy lore. That's part of, you know, the fairy world and, you know, the fee or the, you know, the fae or however they're pronouncing it today. But a lot of it is coming from that worldview, that magical worldview. But remember, there's other types in other parts of the world as far as the, you know, the type of paganism. So two distinctions here, because this is important for talking to neo-pagans, and everything I say now is basically going to apply to neo-paganism, probably what you're going to find today. In the past, almost all pagans didn't have a problem with animal sacrifice. Why? Because if they practiced some kind of magic, a good number of pagans believed that, you know, when you sacrifice something, you could release its energy. And that's how, that's one energy source that you would have, that you could draw in. Because remember, magic theory is pretty simple. You find a power source, you take it to yourself, and then you redirect it outwardly according to your will. Okay? Basic magical worldview. Now, today, though, you will find that just about every, not just about, that's the key, modern Western neo-pagan, Eurocentric pagans are against animal sacrifice. So, but the Afrocentric types of pagans, those that would practice voodoo, hoodoo, things like that, they constantly practice animal sacrifice. It's still part of their pagan worldview. So this is why, and I say this because I tell you, this is why learning the distinctions can be really helpful. At one point, about 10 years ago, there was a fire in a national forest where I live in Southern California. They found at the epicenter of the fire this, you know, with this pentacle, you know, a five-pointed star with a circle around it, and some head and bones and things like that. And, you know, reporters always ask, you know, well, who could have done this? Well, and basically I told her it could have been anyone. You know, who knows? Because remember, most people are making it up as they go. And as we'll see with most neo-paganism and magic worldview, they're going to be eclectic and syncretistic. They're going to borrow from whatever they want to borrow from and put it together however they want to put it together. So I gave a list. Well, it could have been because they saw some sacrificed animals there as well. I said, well, it could have been a Satanist. It could have been, you know, a witch. It could have been a neo-pagan. It could have been, I said, no, because there's different kinds. Oh man, they're the, you know, I got tons and tons of emails and notifications for everyone. What an idiot I was because I said that pagans do animal sacrifice. And of course, one of the biggest virtues now in neo-paganism and witchcraft is tolerance and pluralism. So what I did is basically wrote back and said how intolerant they were, because all I said in the article was that it's possible that a pagan or witch could have done it. I said, well, that's very intolerant of you that you Eurocentric witches and pagans are excluding your Afrocentric brothers and sisters because they do. That's very intolerant of you. So they didn't like that very much, but, you know, but it's true generally that that probably most people you come across are going to be nature worshiping or nature venerating, and they're basically going to be, you know, the kinds of people who venerate, they worship and serve the creation rather than the creator, as Romans 1 tells us. So that's why a good number of them are against animal sacrifice. And again, there is a virtue to love God's creation, but we don't put it above God in our order of worship. Being a steward of the creation, though, is different from worshiping the creation. And that, as Christians, we have to be cautious about. So it's important to know that as a distinction between Eurocentric and Afrocentric paganism. But now, as we think about the groups, like I said, I mentioned modern Druids, Neo-Druidism, which again is mainly comes from the UK area, Northwestern Europe. And so Druidism was one kind of, you know, again, it's a local type of, you know, pagan group, polytheistic, lots of magical practices. There's Asatru, again, there's a, you know, Egyptian type, there's a Greek, the Greek gods, that's coming back. They're all out there today, but for the ones who are practicing this in the modern world, what are some common beliefs? And the key here is that you just got to ask every person in group what they believe, but here are some you're going to find that are common among them. First, is probably what is common is almost all of them are anti-dogmatic and anti-authoritarian. You can't tell me what to believe or what to do. That's why you're not going to find pagan creeds and confessions and things like that, because everybody gets to make it up as they go. There's multiple levels of reality. Two, eclecticism and syncretism. Again, because there is no authority, everybody gets to draw from whatever source they want and put it together they want. That's why most of these groups, at least the functioning groups, are pretty small. Because it's hard to find a large number of people who are going to agree on everything that they want to practice. So you might find, for example, in some witchcraft coven, you know, a dozen people. But they're not going to be thousands and thousands. It's not going to be like a mega church where we find, you know, 3,000 people going to a church. They're usually going to be small, you know, types of groups. Even though they might be loosely associated with other people who believe similar things. Another thing they're going to have in common is mystical experience and mysticism. How are you going to gain the knowledge of this? Is look inside. Okay? It's your own experience with the goddess, the horned god, or your avatar, whatever it happens to be, that's going to define your beliefs, which again goes with their anti-authority, anti-dogmatism that goes on. Probably the biggest problem, and this is the problem for any of these groups, is, you know, I'm going to say this because they're all big problems, but ethical relativism. If you want to try to get to a quick point of discussion, is how can you justify right and wrong? See, if you talk to a lot of the modern witches, they didn't like those Salem witch trials and the idea that people are put to death for practicing witchcraft, but yet at the same time they teach ethical relativism. So you don't get it both ways. If everybody gets to make up their own morality and law, then you have no reason to complain when someone decides witchcraft is evil and gets to put you to death because it's a capital offense. So there either is or is not an objective basis for morality, moral objectivism, or there isn't. But see, and that's why you tell them, say, well, you guys did this, and yeah, well, why should, you know, now you're shoving your morals on me. Why should I care what you think? See, there is no ground in their pluralism and relativistic worldview for a normative system of ethics. And hence, they can never solve the problem of evil because there is no evil. There's only relativism. So, but yet, at the same time, they act as if truth and morals and evil exist. So this is why you want to attack them on a worldview level and get to those underlying presumptions that can never be justified in that particular worldview. Next, the idea of an open metaphysic. Metaphysics and ontology and theology and philosophy are basically, you know, it's the stuff that exists. What it asks the question, what exists? What are beings? What substance? What are attributes and properties? Things like that. The Christian worldview says that there's physics and metaphysics, okay? Particularly, there's a physical world and a non-physical world. I mentioned earlier, there's, you know, an infinite spiritual substance. There's two kinds of limited substances in a Christian worldview. Limited spiritual, limited physical. That's it. But according to the neo-pagan, nope, generally, metaphysics is open. There's multiple levels of reality. The reality you tap into, you know, is going to be probably different from the one I tap into. So from that reality, I basically talk about, quote, my truth or something like that. But, and when I use the word truth, and we use it as Christians, we talk about it in the sense of a correspondence theory of truth, that a proposition or a statement that corresponds to reality is true. Okay? That's the way we use truth. That's the way, you know, the Western world and anybody who's sane uses the word truth, because that's how truth is defined. If my ideas or my statements, propositions, correspond with a mind-independent reality, then we say they're true. Truth isn't what I prefer. Truth isn't what I believe. Truth means my ideas correspond with reality. See, and that's where, when you get to the pluralist on this, and they talk about an open metaphysic, well, that's going to affect their view of epistemology, how they know things are true as well. So, you know, and again, you're going to get different responses there. Tolerance and diversity, all of them are going to teach tolerance and diversity. Nobody has one over another. Different worldviews of animism, hylozoism, or panpsychism, meaning pretty much everything that exists has a soul or spirit or alive in some sense. So that's why these people think they can commune with trees and bushes, you know, the non-physical world, because they're alive in some sense. You know, for us, we know a tree is a tree. Dust is dust, but not according to the neo-pagan. pagan, they're probably going to have one sense where everything has a spirit or is alive. Polytheism, you have, again, multiple gods. That's one way. Some groups, like, you know, the Neo-Greek religions, well, guess what? They still have, you know, Zeus and Apollo and Diana, and, you know, they brought back the old ways. So you can find polytheism. You can find individual groups that believe in pantheism, that everything is divine. Some of them hold to the principle of what's called plurality and dualism, that while there may be a goddess and a horned god and an open metaphysic, usually there are opposites that, you know, one will manifest in the world as opposed to the other, so they have this polarity or dualism involved. For a lot of the Western neo-pagans, and particularly the witches, they've got the goddess worship, and usually she has a consort, the horned god, that's with her, but they're the ones that's a type of polytheism, but yeah, they've got the mother goddess and the horned god. All of them would have a magical worldview that there are powers we can tap into and redirect according to our will. Top of page 2, as I already mentioned, the issue of animal sacrifice, the Eurocentric pagans are going to reject animal sacrifice. And then what is going to be common is that they're going to have an affirmation of life, nature, which, again, we do too. We should affirm life and the goodness of the creation. And that actually, you always want to find points of contact with people with whom you're talking. Yeah, actually, you know, you can actually praise people for saying, yes, we should be life-affirming. We shouldn't be a culture of death. You know, we should, you know, animals in the world, they're God's animals. We shouldn't kill things unless we have a good reason for it. So, we don't worship and serve the creation, but we also have to remember that God owns the creation. It's his stuff. He just leases it to us for a while we're alive on earth. So we're stewards of what God made that is alive. And so sometimes you can start a point of discussion with these life-affirming ideas. Now, common practices as we close here, Sabbats and Esbats, so to speak, and people pronounce it differently. The Sabbats happen a number of times a year. They usually correspond with the solar cycles, and then there are certain, you know, rituals that are connected with that, but they call those Sabbats or Sabbaths. The Esbats correspond with the lunar cycles, and that's where there's certain rituals that, you know, why? Because they're tapping into nature powers, solar lunar cycles. So, and again, I could talk more about that, but the whole idea is that there are powers in nature into which they tap. There's, you know, elementals, you know, earth, air, fire, and water, that there's certain powers associated with the elements that they tap into. There's certain beings and creatures associated with the elements, elemental spirits or elemental creatures. For example, for some in Western paganism, a gnome is an earth elemental type of creature. So those are the kinds of things that go on. So common practices. How do I get my magic and my information? I have to go into an altered state of consciousness. And this is why the idea of asking the spirits, taking drugs, something to get me in an altered state of consciousness so I can get the information is going to be helpful. Then, you know, divination, magic and sorcery, and spiritism are already covered in the occult lecture. What are they trying to do? Get knowledge, get power, or contact the spirit to the point of your own personal psychic powers or psychic development. Okay? Why? So you can have more psychic or, you know, psuche, soulish or mental abilities to affect the external world. And, you know, okay, so these are the common things that we're going to see. Now, with a couple minutes left here, we have a minute or two. Quick biblical assessment of this. The point is that, see, dealing with a cult of Christianity, remember, they're going to use the Bible as a cult of Christianity. A Wiccan, a neo-pagan, or someone like that, they're not using the Bible. So even though we need to preach to them, but remember that someone who's got their fingers in the ears, faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word of God, well, they have to hear it. And sometimes we're preaching to people, they're not listening. They got their fingers in their ears, and it's not penetrating. So sometimes, you know, again, there is pre-evangelism that we can do because we have to get them to the point where they want to listen. But the point is that we need to get to the gospel as soon as possible because the Holy Spirit is works with the word. The word of God is alive and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword. You know, piercing asunder is the vision of, you know, sword and spirit, joints and marrow. And we're told that the Bible is the sword of the Spirit. So there is a connection between the preached word and the convicting and ministering work of the Spirit. So we get to that as soon as possible. But here's why we want to, in pre-evangelism, you want to think about their worldview, and you want to give them things that their worldview can't answer. Only Christianity answers, really is complete and answers everything about the existing world. Others do it in various ways, but for example, if someone is a polytheist, and again, they appropriately say, if you're a polytheist, well, whose ethic rules? Is it Zeus or Apollo or Hades? See, what's right and wrong? If you have some kind of divine command system of ethics, you know, normative behavior, behavioral ethics, whose God do I follow? Which one is right? See, if I'm in Zeus's jurisdiction and I don't like what he says, well, I'll go to Hades' jurisdiction and follow him. So you get ethical relativism, which is exactly what they affirm, but at the same time, they complain, what about the persecution of witches? Well, why should you complain? According to you, everybody's got their own morality. How are you going to justify that? See, they can't. They can't deal with that. So again, I'm going to end here, and then we can pick up on this in the question time, critiques of some of these other areas. But if you approach it at a worldview level, we can really start to make a dent, and then eventually, you know, again, we get them as quickly to the gospel.